I have even been accused of seeking to reclaim the term in my writing, excusing the bad behavior of some Bitcoin maximalists in an effort to elevate the ism's more virtuous tenets. However, my response would be that this is an essential exercise. Without separating the aspiration, the ism, from its adherents, the ists, it's impossible to elevate what Bitcoin maximalism encourages, either in theory or in practice. Still, should there be a gap between the ism and the ists, this piece will seek to correct it, offering a view on the principles that underlie Bitcoin maximalism, one shaped by my years of studying crypto-isms, initially from a lens of skepticism.
The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And you know what we're going to do today? We're going to read. We're going to do a little bit of reading. We're going to read about Bitcoin maximalism. So there has been all sorts of social media nonsense going on about Bitcoin maximalism and, you know, call it a symptom of the bear market, but there's just been fights and another cancellation, and Nick Carter was and Udi were ousted and blah, 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 blah. Like, it just, the whole thing is just kind of a lot of noise. But, you know, it's something that happens every cycle, and we get to redefine, or redefine's not the word, to narrow down, to try to find more specificity in what the point of Bitcoin maximalism is. Now, I think probably the best thread on this so far, the one that I agree with the most and I think is the strongest foundation, is a simple tweet thread. It's like five tweets or something by Dergigi. But Pete Rizzo has a really good article on this. In fact, this is like his second or third article, I think, on this. I have not read them yet on the show, though. But I thought this one was a pretty decent foundation to start the discussion. We'll be doing a few episodes on this. I'm considering reading Nick Carter's I'm leaving Bitcoin or anti-Bitcoin maximalism article. I don't know. I'll take responses for this. Anybody in the Audionauts or anybody on Twitter, let me know if you want to hear the article. I'm happy to do an audio version of it. But I'm also going to follow this up with at least sometime this week. We might cover some other things first, but I want to do an episode about Bitcoin maximalism from my perspective, because I think the only way that one can explain what Bitcoin maximalism is from my own, from your own perspective. Like, I can't define it for other people. I can say, this is why I call myself this, and these are my principles, and if you think these are valuable too, join me. But I do not excuse what somebody else does on Twitter. I do not excuse someone else being mean or saying something stupid or being a statist, blah, 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 whatever. I'll tell you what I think, and I'm not going to have to defend somebody else who calls themselves a Bitcoin maximalist if I don't agree with what they said. And I find that that attempt of framing constantly placed on quote-unquote Bitcoin maximalists, that the statements or actions of every single supposed Bitcoin maximalist must be defended by everyone else, which I think is just nonsense when it comes from a perspective of, like, groups or supposed people who are part of the same group. It's fascinating that I see Bitcoin maximalists arguing about everything. I don't know of a group that argues as much as Bitcoiners do. Maybe libertarians. They're probably the only ones, and I think both of them share part of the same reason, is that they have principles and then they draw conclusions from those principles. And not everybody draws the same conclusions, even though they adhere to the same principles, so they end up fighting with each other viciously because they all very, very strongly believe the principles. But anyway, I'm getting way ahead of myself. We'll cover this in a couple of different episodes from a couple of different directions this week. So if you're interested in this topic, get ready, because we're going to cover it. But let's get into the read before we take any longer. This is from Pete Rizzo, Everybody knows Pete. Pete is Rizzo's got a. We've done a number of his works on this show, and he's great. Works with Bitcoin Magazine, and this one was posted on Forbes. Real quick, I just want to thank our amazing sponsors for supporting this show and keeping this project funded. We've got CoinKite, the solution to all of your Bitcoin hardware problems. You have got to check out the Cold Card MK4 if you have not. Discount in the show notes, code Bitcoin Audible. And then Swan Bitcoin, the Bitcoin onboarding experience. If you know anybody who was trying to buy Bitcoin or learn about Bitcoin, send them to Swan Bitcoin. And then lastly, Fold. Fold is fiat done right. Stack sats on every single thing that you buy, get sats back everywhere, plus extra on gift cards, plus the daily spin wheel, plus the little metaverse pickup sats, like everything. I get sats every single day, multiple different ways, and Fold is at the center. Yet again, discount code Bitcoin Audible, links, and all sorts of stuff in the show notes. Check them out. All right, with that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, How to Be a Bitcoin Maximalist by Pete Rizzo. Ism, a system of beliefs accepted as authoritative by some group or school. Ist, a follower of a distinctive practice, system, or philosophy. Call it a sign of the bear market, but debate over Bitcoin maximalism is once again all the rage. In the wake of venture capitalist Nick Carter's call to reject the ideology, there have been no shortage of articles on the subject, on its origins, inconsistencies, and what its relevance says about the warring isms in the market at large. It's a worthy effort. After all, the exploration succeeds in eradicating one of the worst lenses imposed on the sector, that its social groups are a symptom of investment asset mania, no different than those blindly betting on meme stocks in traditional markets. It's a view which, while common in the media, excludes the essential differential. Cryptocurrency market isms are built on claims about the economic and computer science advances Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies have achieved, and thus have a direct relationship to those claims. While some are the product entirely of fandom, others are more complex, attempting to both define a scientific position and then encourage beliefs and conduct based on those claims. Indeed, it is the latter definition which best categorizes Bitcoin maximalism, and why it has emerged as a flashpoint for a crypto industry in the midst of a down market. Compounding the debate is a lack of definitional clarity. Ask two people what Bitcoin maximalism is, and you're bound to get four answers. In my most recent Forbes article, I introduced a three-point definition, arguing the movement is shaped by certain beliefs. Point, that Bitcoin is a free market economy and fair monetary system, operating outside the state. Point, that the advancement of its economy is only limited by further invention. And point, that all crypto assets compete with this definition, offering weaker guarantees for users and thus should be opposed to varying degrees. Adding to this ire is the final point that Bitcoin maximalism is an antithesis to the dominant ism of the day, crypto agnosticism, or the belief that all or many crypto assets are unique investments, an emerging, quote, asset class in which Bitcoin is but a, quote, digital gold in the process of being outcompeted or replaced. Still, I'll admit this definition stops short of being satisfactory, as Bitcoin maximalism's chief offense is its antagonism. And indeed, it is that practical application its critics most often reject, arguing Bitcoin maximalism encourages Bitcoin maximalists to be intolerant and belligerent, and to ignore and misrepresent the reality of the market in practice. I have even been accused of seeking to reclaim the term in my writing, excusing the bad behavior of some Bitcoin maximalists in an effort to elevate the ism's more virtuous tenets. However, my response would be that this is an essential exercise. Without separating the aspiration, the ism, from its adherents, the ists, it's impossible to evaluate what Bitcoin maximalism encourages, either in theory or in practice. Still, should there be a gap between the ism and the ists, this piece will seek to correct it, offering a view on the principles that underlie Bitcoin maximalism, one shaped by my years of studying crypto-isms, initially from a lens of skepticism. With that vantage, my assertion is most Bitcoin maximalists are united in the following beliefs, which, while challenging to the status quo, are ultimately positive for Bitcoin users and humanity at large. 1. A commitment to safeguarding Bitcoin for future generations. Bitcoin maximalists believe that Bitcoin is the lone, global, digital alternative to state-managed economies that, by virtue of its design, can withstand both government attack and centralization over time, and thus it alone, among monetary systems, has the opportunity to offer a truly neutral money in perpetuity. They therefore above all seek to preserve the future use of such a system by humanity. In this view, Bitcoin maximalism's foremost goal is to help other users secure both the system itself, Bitcoin, and the assets in its economy, Bitcoins, for future use. Bitcoin maximalists assume that we may not yet have seen the full scale of attacks that could disrupt or subvert the Bitcoin system, and that these attacks may increase over time. They accept that we do not have all of the answers about how Bitcoin works or will work, and seek to develop this understanding through research, dialogue, and debate. They believe cryptocurrencies with a lower likelihood of standing this test of time should be criticized, and their distinction from Bitcoin made clear. Number 2. A commitment to running the Bitcoin software. Bitcoin maximalists believe that the defining feature of the Bitcoin economy is the ability of all users to audit its money supply and history of transactions by running software. They therefore run and encourage others to run the Bitcoin software, believing that it is the operation of the software, not simply the ownership of the asset, that is key to both its decentralization and keeping the network free from fraud. As such, they seek to make it easier for Bitcoin users to run the software, creating tools and programs that ease the barrier to entry. Bitcoin maximalists also question cryptocurrencies whose networks have a low number of software users, or that impose high barriers to running the software. They assert that cryptocurrencies that do so should be criticized for this issue, and their distinction from Bitcoin should be made clear. Number 3. A commitment to slow software changes and enfranchising users. Bitcoin maximalists see Bitcoin as the product of decades of failed attempts to build working digital cash, and that this invention does not require significant improvement. They believe, should a gap between the capabilities of the Bitcoin software today and its full potential be uncovered, approval of the technical change should be a slow and deliberative process, one that is only made with near-universal consensus and no vocal dissent. This is because Bitcoin maximalists accept the right of all users to run and use the software at all times, and oppose all efforts to enact changes to the software that would require users to upgrade to a new version that is incompatible with their version. They accept they cannot foresee or predict every instance in which someone may need to use Bitcoin, or the extremity of their circumstance, and believe that anyone who needs to use the Bitcoin software should never be denied this ability through a lack of availability. Thus, they believe that cryptocurrencies that upgrade their software through such processes risk disenfranchising users, and that because of this, their developers should be questioned, and the distinction between their software from Bitcoin made clear. Number 4. A commitment to building products and services on Bitcoin. Bitcoin maximalists acknowledge entrepreneurs will attempt to build products and services for Bitcoin users which operate outside of the Bitcoin codebase, but seek to hold these businesses to a high standard. While it is acknowledged some Bitcoin users will want to use custody or lending services, these systems can and do pose a real risk to users, as the recent collapse of large custodians like Celsius and Voyager shows. Bitcoin maximalists accept they cannot stop the creation of such businesses, but strive to ensure their users understand the trade-offs they make when using them, and how they compare to the direct custody of Bitcoin. Further, they believe over time, many of these services can be recreated in ways that leverage the trustless properties of Bitcoin and strive to rebuild these services in ways that improve the trade-offs and risk profile for users. To date, advances in this area have included multi-signature wallets, which allow users today to divide their Bitcoins between high-security vaults, and new proposals like Fediments, in which users can trust friends to help them secure their Bitcoin. They believe that crypto services that seek to profit from the custody of their users' Bitcoin should be questioned, and their distinction from Bitcoin-based alternatives made clear.
Number 5. A commitment to using Bitcoin to the greatest extent. Bitcoin maximalists seek to extend the Bitcoin economy by using and testing products actively, and by encouraging others to do so. They seek to encourage local merchants to accept Bitcoin and strive to pay others in Bitcoin, growing the economy to the greatest possible extent. They accept that the system today is not capable of yet managing the full financial lives of users, but believe that over time, they can develop services that extend the use of Bitcoin to encompass more of this activity. Perhaps the best example of this to date is the Bitcoin Lightning Network, an open-source software built on Bitcoin that enables users to send payments at a low cost and that is a viable alternative to traditional payment platforms, if not in Western markets, then in the developing world, where alternatives are lacking entirely. In sum, they respect the right of users to decide when and where to use Bitcoin, but aspire to increase the activity of the Bitcoin economy. Number 6. A commitment to opposing censorship and surveillance. To ensure the Bitcoin software will be maximally successful, Bitcoin maximalists seek to acknowledge the attack vectors by which the network could be subverted. Thus, they are skeptical and critical of any company or service that would seek to monitor users or increase the knowledge that hostile actors may have of the Bitcoin system as a whole, understanding they must protect the network for long-term use. They accept that these services cannot be entirely eliminated today, but strive to support software and services that improve the privacy and anonymity of Bitcoin users, recognizing that these tools may be critical to the survival of the system and the protection of users. They believe that cryptocurrencies that offer a greater privacy today should be studied so that privacy upgrades for Bitcoin can be better understood, but seek to question their viability as an investment, given it may be possible to rebuild these systems on Bitcoin over time. Number 7. A commitment to supporting mining by any and all means. Bitcoin maximalists understand that proof of work is essential to the operation of the network, and believe there are no alternatives to this system that exist without trade-offs that would reduce the viability of that economy. This is because, at its heart, they believe proof of work is the only consensus method by which a cryptocurrency can be distributed to anyone in the world in a free market without barriers to entry imposed by any group. They are sympathetic to the fact that the fundamentals of how and why Bitcoin mining works are not well represented through observations of the industrial mining sector today, but strive to make distinctions between the two concepts clear. Yet, they are critical of crypto assets and services that misrepresent proof of work, and use these misrepresentations to boost the market viability of softwares and services where they have a greater control. Bitcoin maximalists believe that proof of work is so essential, it should be supported by any means. Miners operating on renewable energy are as valuable to the system as ones that use oil, nuclear, or any other alternative fuel. Number 8. A commitment to crypto minimalism. Bitcoin maximalists are skeptical and critical of claims to technical advances made by other cryptocurrency software, and seek to maintain and bolster a culture of scrutiny. Still, they acknowledge that there are new services and products made available in the crypto sector, and that the product of this effort can provide learnings to Bitcoin. However, they believe that these crypto assets and services are profiting off the short-term limitations of Bitcoin, and thus their use should be discouraged in order to inspire and fund the development of like offerings built on the Bitcoin network,
After all, any resources spent toward improving other networks is effort that could have bolstered Bitcoin. Examples of this may include US dollar stablecoins like Tether, which are being reimagined via a proposal called Taro and a company called Synonym, and even the Bitcoin Lightning Network, which prior to scaling for payments, attempted to replace dedicated crypto protocols that claim to be designed for this purpose. They assume that in taking this path, they can encourage alternatives to crypto assets and services that issue tokens, especially when the sale of the tokens creates separate classes of investors with different risk profiles based on the project's success or failure. They believe that by building these services on Bitcoin, they can align incentives whereby the value of such services benefit all users of Bitcoin equally, and thus exist without undue benefit to any privileged investor or narrow shareholder group. Number 9. A commitment to keeping Bitcoin open for all. Bitcoin maximalists believe everyone in the world should use Bitcoin as money, and that the Bitcoin economy will ultimately be used by all people, regardless of race, religion, or nationality. Thus, they seek to inform and educate people from all walks of life about the benefits of Bitcoin when possible, assuming that everyone can benefit from the use of Bitcoin. They accept some people may hold ideological biases that may hold back their adoption or use of Bitcoin, and when warranted, strive to be critical of these ideological biases. Still, they strive to advance Bitcoin before any other ideology or interest, and do not seek to promote Bitcoin only for the advancement of a certain ideology or group. Conclusion. The definition of Bitcoin maximalism above will doubtless find detractors, and there are some who would dismiss it altogether, favoring some stricter or more succinct description. As always, this is Bitcoin. So recognize no one is telling you to adopt this framework if it's not useful to you, least of all myself. Still, if Bitcoin maximalism is to succeed as an ism, becoming, in the view of author Balaji Srinivasan, an influential system of beliefs on the world stage, my argument remains that the movement can become more positive and aspirational, less defined by what it is against, and more defined by what it is for. At the end of the day, no amount of aggression on the part of Bitcoin maximalists will make the wider crypto economy or the world of government monies disappear, nor will it fully advance the goals of the Bitcoin movement as a whole. Certainly, the recent events in the crypto sector have drawn a contrast between what Bitcoin is seeking to achieve and the offerings of the wider crypto world. That is a success. It's up to Bitcoin maximalists to build on it. All right, and that concludes Pete Rizzo's, what was the title? I already forgot. How to Be a Bitcoin Maximalist. And this, again, was in Forbes. And, you know, Pete has actually a couple of pieces on this, and I haven't covered, there's been like a handful of stuff. I wanted to kind of see the smoke clear out rather than go through all this Bitcoin Maximalist stuff while everybody's still arguing. So I feel like we've reached a good point, and I want to do, I'm going to do a guy's take on this. I feel like I've done one before, but I even still think that this misses essentially a big part of the argument. And what's funny is somebody actually pointed out in the in a comment underneath this post somewhere, I think it was somewhere on Twitter, somebody posted out one of the comments that he should have added another one and made it the Ten Commandments of Bitcoin Maximalism. But what's funny is that I feel like he missed, in my opinion, the most important one, and we'll get to that in just a second. And speaking of Bitcoin-only companies, Fold and the Fold Card. Fold has been a Bitcoin-only company for a long time. In fact, they actually supported the Lightning Network really, really early. It was one of the earliest companies I remember getting on board and actually supporting the network when it was highly unreliable. But they have grown a lot since then, and now they offer a debit card, one that is essentially my only, well, it's not my only debit card, but it's the only one I really use. It's probably about 99% of my purchases, just because there are barely a handful of things that I cannot put on my Fold card right now, but it is officially my bank. Because using the Fold debit card, the premium or the Spin Plus card, I get sats back on literally everything that I do, everything that I buy, all of my bills, everything that I can put through this thing, I get sats back on. I get all my friends and everybody to spin the wheel with me, and I stack respins, and, you know, I get 1%, 2%. I mean, you can get up to 100%. I actually got 100% once on a plane ticket to Mexico for the Bitcoin Standard Conference. No joke. I got the entire cost back in Bitcoin because I got a spin on my debit card. And then on top of that, with the Spin Plus membership, you get, you know, 5% back on Amazon gift cards up to $500 a month. You can get tons of percent back on gift cards for all sorts of other major merchants. And you even just get free sats every day. You just get a spin wheel. I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do is I spin the wheel and I get some free sats. You don't even have to sign up for that. Just go through my link at guyswan.com/fold. You'll get 5,000 free sats just for signing up. And if you want to do the premium card like I do, you get 20% off with code BitcoinAudible. That is 20% off. Again, that is code BitcoinAudible. Check them out, link and discount code in the show notes. All right, let's jump back in. But I think this is a pretty good breakdown of at least the framing of the typical Bitcoin maximalist. It's crazy to me, and I talked about this a lot with the Insider on Shitcoin Insider episode, the latest one, actually, it's number 8. But we talked about this a lot, and I talked about how basically the lowest common denominator of anything perceived negative in the Twitter space in the name of Bitcoin is being labeled as Bitcoin maximalism. And there is a lot of quote-unquote toxicity in Bitcoin maximalism. But I think what so many really fail to see, the positioning that is completely lost on them, is how much toxicity is in response. Why is there so much toxicity on social media? And I want to get that in kind of full. I really want to kind of dig into that idea in either the next episode or the guy's take I'm going to do on Bitcoin maximalism. Because I think the toxicity is a protest. A protest. It's the mirror side, or it's the other side of the coin to the incredible toxicity and intolerance of the establishment. But somehow, because it's the establishment, because it's the norm, it's not being recognized. Instead, it's being appeased. And I think a lot of what's going on here is that Bitcoin maximalism is easy to shit on because it's a small group. It looks like a small group, whereas the establishment has to be included. The establishment can't be pushed back on because then you're just being mean, even if the ideology is horrifically evil, like evil to its base and anti-human. That can't be pushed back on because that's a big group and we want to appease the big group. And I think this is a fundamentally bad framing, and that's what Bitcoin maximalism rejects from a social standpoint. But it's not just Bitcoin maximalism. It's an entirely new alternative culture that is pushing back against the viciousness of the mainstream, the domestic terrorists of everybody who disagrees with the establishment, the complete and utter lies and people being drugged through the mud and fired and segregated and, you know, put in groups and labeled and, you know, listed as an app of whether they're approved or unapproved. The society is becoming a vicious, toxic, poisonous cesspool, and it is a response. The fact that people are being mean on the Twitters and mean on Facebook is the absolute least of our problems, and in fact, it's being caused because people refuse to stand up and push back against this. I appreciate the hostility. I appreciate the fact that people are getting pissed because it doesn't stop if people don't stand up and say, fucking stop it. Stop it. This is wrong. This is bad. I don't care about your feelings. What you are doing is awful, and you have to stop it right now. You are going to stop injecting chemical castration drugs into 10-year-old girls. It is wrong, and no, I'm not going to appease you because you feel bad when I say that. Coddling to the opinions and the feelings of the insane is exactly how we got here, and it needs to stop. Appeasing delusion for the sake of being nice is a problem. It is not polite. It is not good. It is not a positive for society. It is a problem. It is a big, big problem. And when that leaks into the political sphere and it's being used to manipulate our money,
It causes systemic destruction in society. You cannot sustain a delusion through money printing. All you can do is endlessly consume resources towards the end of a false vision of reality until reality falls apart. That is what we are experiencing. That is the outcome of our current political experiment. And the toxicity on social media, the social construct, the social anomaly that is Bitcoin maximalism, the toxicity, is A, not even slightly limited to Bitcoin maximalism. It is not Bitcoin maximalism that has started this. It is Bitcoin maximalism that recognizes how deep the problem is and the fact that we should not be apologetic and we should not quietly appease and be polite to the people who want to come in and destroy something that is fundamentally revolutionary and necessary. Absolutely 100% critical to the survival of our society. And you can say that that sounds like, you know, I'm just pontificating or I'm just, you know, masturbating over here about how freaking important Bitcoin is, but it's true. And I think it's, if you disagree with me, I believe it's because of your ignorance, not mine. And I'm not going to apologize. I'm not going to pretend, I'm not going to cull my words. I'm not going to pretend it's not true to make you feel better. I want you to be uncomfortable and be forced to address these issues. I'm sick of the normies in my life just pretending like big issues don't matter. Like there isn't serious shit happening in the world and refusing to talk about it because, oh, it's just easier to talk about a TV show. I can actually have real conversations about real problems with people who are, quote unquote, toxic, evil Bitcoin maximalists. And I can debate with them. I can argue with them. I argue with Bitcoiners all the freaking time. And that's one of the most comical things about the contradiction, about the criticisms of Bitcoin maximalism, is that as if there's some cohesive group that just all believe the same thing, when all they do is argue. All they do, every time I log onto Twitter, it's just Bitcoiners arguing with each other. It's just everybody convinced that the other person is a statist or an idiot. It's just like the cypherpunks. It's just like the protocol wars during the early internet. It's all incredibly opinionated people that are actually trying to fight out what the truth is. They're trying to narrow down and figure out what really matters so that we can have a common denominator of a path to move forward. And you only get that through argument. You don't get that through, let's not talk about things that are uncomfortable because everybody will be sad. Grow a pair of balls. Grow up. You'll never solve a hard problem if you don't have a hard conversation. And understand that goes just as much for the baby Bitcoin maximalists who can't handle a little bit of criticism. There's a bunch of people who call themselves Bitcoin maximalists who are just buffoons. They're just idiots on Twitter. Now, there are trolls everywhere. There's everybody under every single title is somewhere going to be mean on social media. But if people were mean to you, get over it. Seriously, guys, grow a little bit of skin. If a bunch of self-appointed maxis insult you or drag you through the mud because you do something that is honestly ethically questionable, but then that makes you go full crypto, tokenized, utility token, whatever nonsense, and you just jump into the casino of the crypto nonsense and just start supporting scams for the sake of just being, you're just contradicting the quote-unquote Bitcoin maxis, man, you didn't have any principles to begin with. I'm sure at some point, and it's almost happened a couple of times, but at some point, I'm going to get drugged through the mud. Everybody who calls themselves, you know, Bitcoin maximalist, like, I fully expect it. I feel like it's just kind of like a rite of passage at some point that you're going to get obliterated by the Bitcoin social community, and I am totally fine with that. It'll suck. I'll probably whine a little bit about it, and, you know, I'll go into my little hole, and I'll cry for a day. Oh, I lost my followers or whatever. But you know what? I'll get over it, and I'm not going to leave Bitcoin because of it. I'm not going to think that it has anything to do with Bitcoin. And I'm certainly not going to embrace a whole bunch of scams and nonsense projects for the sake of getting back at them. And if I do, I really hope they make it worse. I hope they drag me through the mud twice as hard if I'm being a little bitch about it. And I told myself I was not going to rant like this in this episode. I was going to save it for the next one. But I didn't. I'm so bad at this. It's amazing how worked up I can get about some of this stuff. I don't know, I think it matters, though. Like, and I try not to be, I don't want to be negative, you know? Like, I don't want to, and I don't think,
I don't even think bad of Udi. Like, even when I'm, like, talking with my brother, and my brother gives him way more crap than I do. Like, Udi and Nick Carter or whatever. Like, I still really enjoy Nick Carter's writing, and I'm not going to stop recommending his articles, and, like, some of his analogies on Proof of Work are still some of my favorite. But I don't agree with his assessment. I don't agree with the article. Maybe I should read the article. Maybe I should read his response for the sake of, you know, laying it all out there, laying out the entire argument. And then I'll do, like, kind of my take on all this, because I think to some degree there's clearly something valid in just not being an ass. Like, I'm not countering that or saying that, like, everybody being mean on Twitter is, like, specifically a good thing. It's not a good thing to be mean, but it's also not a good thing to be nice when people are being wrong, when people are wrong, or they're doing something very bad. And I think that's a far, far bigger problem today than being mean on Twitter. And I also think everybody having, like, super thin skin and trying to find their safe space and, you know, removing dislikes from YouTube because it's just not nice for people. I think that's also a really, really big problem. And we need to actually rediscover who we are. We need to learn a little bit of independence and a little bit of personal strength. And instead, we're teaching personal weakness. We're teaching dependency. It has gone so far to the complete polar opposite of total internal breakdown and weakness and servitude to those around you, that if someone does not feed you the proper pronoun, that it should amount to suicide. Can you imagine having such a low, pathetic opinion of other people that using the wrong grammar could possibly collapse their entire internal mental structure to the degree that they would blow their brains out? I'm sorry, but there is nothing I can do for that person. And I am not going to change the way that I speak to appease their internal patheticism. A person that is in that situation has deep, serious personal problems that they need to sort out. They need to figure out who they are. They need to have a little bit of confidence. They need to learn what their path and their purpose is in the world. I understand that there's generations of people who feel life is meaningless right now. We're in a deeply nihilistic society, and I think it's very, very much tied to the nature of our money. Nothing is disconnected from that. When you take the foundation of how we value things in our lives, paths and skills and decisions that we make, things that we commit decades of our lives to, and you manipulate it, you twist it to be incongruous with reality, to push us to make profit in something that is actually destructive, and to make that sustainable through trillions of dollars in subsidies and manipulation and price controls, of course we become nihilists. Of course we become hopeless. Of course we feel like everything is empty, because it actually is. The economy isn't reality anymore. It doesn't reflect our actual values with the weight of the decision of real money and real cost and real trade-off. It just becomes a shallow political facade that grows like a cancer on the world until we have to shift. The shift back to reality is so great that it just causes untold amounts of destruction, poverty, and death. It's like the story of society. We do this over and over again. And a broken, corrupt money is at the core of the entire system. We have to fix that. And we have to stand up for it. And I'm sorry, but if you give up on that because people were mean on Twitter, or if, you know, someone else's grammar choice is the straw that broke the camel's back of your personal fortitude, then I'm sorry, you're not even part of the fight. There is nothing meaningful or substantive that you can do in the world that isn't more difficult than dealing with meanies on Twitter and a grammar dispute. And in my opinion, if those are the things that move a person in the world or fundamentally alter their path or their principles or their goals, then they're just a spectator in the world. And we should all strive to remove those from the scope of things that affect us. I mean, they always will. Everybody, you know, somebody calling you stupid doesn't feel good. Nobody likes that. But sticks and stones, man, it is not a virtue to be a wuss. And the number of people who brag in our society today, literally boast that they are weak, like it makes them better than other people, is a really, really weird thing that I can't get behind. The glorification of victimhood, of I am just a, because of my race, or because of how tall or short I am, or because of, just insert into the blank any stupid thing, that any arbitrary thing, and more importantly, something that I can't control, that somehow this makes me subject to other people. This is why I can't accomplish anything. This is why I can't get a good job. This is why nobody appreciates my skills. It's like, okay, so go curl up in a corner somewhere and rot. That's gonna stop you? You're gonna wait until everyone in the world is beaten into submission to appease whatever your view of, like, that somebody else has to hire you for the reason you want them to? I just... Jesus, man. Where are the people who look that in the face and say, yeah, that's not gonna stop me. I'm gonna build it anyway. I'm gonna do it anyway. I'm gonna convince this person that I've got the skills. Have we just forgotten that our mental attitude is everything? That if we just believe that it's hopeless, we could have a million opportunities come across our desk a day. And why would you ever start one? Why would you ever grab any of them if you've convinced yourself that it won't work, that it can't work, that everybody is just going to disallow you from doing anything meaningful in your life? You realize that's a prerequisite. You'll never, ever take an opportunity if you've convinced yourself that it doesn't work. Why would you? It's like saying that, like, oh, I'm going to start building a car that I know will never run. No, you're not going to go. You're just not going to build the car. Believing that you can accomplish something is a prerequisite to accomplishing anything, because it's the very motivation that gets you to hit the start button, to go. And it's a struggle every day. It's tough to remind myself to just get up and go produce a thing, to just get over the fact that I'm not happy with the rant that I'm going to make, that, you know, it's not perfect, and I'm going to ramble. I'm going to say at least three very stupid things before the end of a 15-minute stretch, and I'm going to listen back to it at some point, or somebody's going to quote me, and I'm gonna be like, God, that guy was a moron. But you gotta get over it. You gotta get over it, and you gotta go do something. And when things get hairy, when things feel hopeless, sit back and go back to your principles, go back to your values, go back to why you're doing a thing, and refocus. I don't know how many times I've had to do that. Like, even with this podcast, there's multiple times where I was just convinced that the podcast was dead, or that I shouldn't do it anymore, and, you know, I you know, whined about it for a day or two, and, you know, my wife, you know, even got annoyed with me, because, like, oh, like, just, it's doing great, you know, everything's doing great, but you hit plateaus, you know, you forget how far you came, you forget the reference to where things are moving. You just get wrapped up in the current struggle or the current framing, but you get past it. Like, that's the task of life. You have something to hold on to. You have something to right the ship. You have a you know, lighthouse to just point you in the direction when everything is messy, when everything is confused. You go back to the basics. And understand, Twitter and social media is a great resource if you know how to use it, but it's noise. It is the social world. It is politics as a platform, and it is literally drowning in trolls and keyboard warriors who don't do or accomplish anything, and they're literally professional bullies or just professional morons.
And I will fully admit that I pay them way too much attention. It's very, very easy. It's kind of how Twitter is designed, for Christ's sake. So part of me gets it, but the other part of me chastises that part for letting it get to me. And that part's usually the one that comes out in the rant. You know, the I'm better than everybody else, and I'm the one that doesn't let it get to him, and blah, blah, blah. But that's not true. Everybody knows that's not true. It's a constant struggle. It's every single time it comes up. It's like, you know, an addiction or something. It's not one decision to stop. It's the same decision to stop every single time it comes up. Over and over again. 1,000 times a week, a month, a year. Like, it's convincing yourself that there is one decision. There's one path. And to keep leaning on that, keep making the same decision over and over and over again. Anybody can make the decision to stop a thing once and then not make that decision again for, you know, the rest of the year. But that's, of course, not how anything is accomplished. And this is a super roundabout way of saying why I think Bitcoin maximalism is actually a set of core principles that matter a lot. And one of those principles, which I think there are two principles that I think Pete Rizzo kind of misses from the social standpoint. I think the nine that he lay out here are really, really good. They're really good in the context of most of the self-proclaimed Bitcoin maximalists and Bitcoiners and why they direct or criticize things in the way that they typically do. But of course, it's not, you know, a cohesive group. There's actually a really good quote here because I kind of have the same frame of reference that, like, I can only talk about it from my position, from my perspective. I tell you what I think Bitcoin maximalism is because I'm the one that defines it for me. Like, Eric Wall's idea of Bitcoin maximalism is so far away from what I consider Bitcoin maximalism because he just is equating whatever the most negative thing is on Twitter of the day as Bitcoin maximalism. Like, it's just, It's the same game of politics, right? Is that the left will just point out all the biggest hicks or dummies on the right who say the most ridiculous stuff, and that's the right. And then the right does the exact same thing. The most psychotic, you know, woke, whatever, like however crazy you want to get it, that's the left. Everybody outside of the group almost always, I mean, it's axiomatic, really, that unless you have a deep understanding of somebody else's ideology, all you are going to see or believe is a caricature of that ideology or of that group. Because frankly, there's just not enough time. There's not enough, like, you have to understand a caricature of things. That's why collectivism is such a dangerous shorthand. It's useful in some context to treat people as groups or to think, to mentally frame people as groups, but when you start creating laws, when you start creating structures that actually treat people as groups, you create a set of systemic, deeply negative incentives that end in disaster every single time. That's why collectivism, from an individual standpoint, to believe in a collective, to believe that libertarians are this way, or Republicans are this way, or liberals are this way, can be a useful short-term, shallow filter. But that's about it. That's kind of the depth that it becomes useful at. As soon as you go any deeper, as soon as you have an interaction with an individual and you actually have to work with them for any length of time and you're not just kind of like generally directing the values of your social group or directing your social group to the values that you want to align with, but you're dealing with an individual and you start applying what you think about the group, you become an ignorant moron. You become almost always a total fool, except in the rare circumstance that you find somebody who is literally just a reflection of their group and that they just change and modify whatever they believe for whatever the seeming group ideology. Like, some people are actually collectivists in the sense that they don't actually have any beliefs themselves. They're just a reflection of what mainstream Republican looks like or what mainstream liberalism looks like or et cetera. And that absolutely exists in Bitcoin maximalism. It exists in every single group anywhere. So my idea of Bitcoin maximalism is totally different from Eric Wall's. And that's because I I define myself as a Bitcoin maximalist, and I believe what I believe, and I actually think very hard about it. I actually work a lot. I read a lot. I scour ideas. I have looked into crypto. I even have, as much as it's, you know, usually just me crapping on projects, me and the insider, I have a podcast because there is something about crypto that interests me. And I think there are useful things being done, but I think they're being done in a useless way. They're being done, it's like, you know, building something that only goes in one direction, but it's driving down a cul-de-sac towards the end of the cul-de-sac. What they built might be interesting, but it's just going to end. It's not a sustainable project, whether or not it becomes interesting or there is a piece of it that can be used elsewhere. But I do. I constantly reassess my opinions, my thoughts, and I try to follow a lot of people in crypto. I've got a circle, or a bubble, just like everybody else. That's inevitable. But I at least try to be honest with myself about it, and I hope that that's, I mean, to me, that's a principle of Bitcoin maximalism. The reason I am still Bitcoin only is because I believe Bitcoin is the only thing that actually achieves the goal that I am here for, the separation of money and state. And that is a hard fight to fight. That is going to be way more difficult than all of our grammar concerns, all of our political concerns, all of our social media bullying, all of our, whether we're being polite or inclusive or whatever it is, that is a much, much bigger fight. And one of those principles that I think is key to Bitcoin maximalism is the fact that our feelings do not trump the truth. Being nice to crypto projects does not come before telling them why their system is going to fail, why it's economically foolish, why utility tokens are nonsense. And I don't think, I say that, and I try to be nice when I say that. I've been on, I mean, I'm not invited on shows that much anymore, and I feel like I've been very amiable when I do this, but I've been on a Litecoin show, and I've talked about why I don't think Litecoin has a sustainable future. I've done this a lot. I feel like I argue the point quite a bit, and I try to be nice. I'm not a lot of the time. But we have a chronic disorder of lying to make people feel better, and it needs to stop. Lying has consequences. Living by fallacy is destructive. Changing your behavior to appease or try to align yourself with something that is not true because it might hurt somebody's feelings is not a good way to go about life. And it is certainly not something we want in Bitcoin. Bitcoin is real. Bitcoin is code. Bitcoin is a network that exists in the real world in an adversarial environment. If we believe something or try to blind ourselves with something that feels nice but isn't true, well, then we're going to end up in the situation Ethereum is in. Hard truths are worth more than your feelings. And another one is printing money is always, always an incentive in crypto. That monetary seniorage is one of the greatest corruptors of motivation. Printing money is unethical. And every single crypto project is trying to do this. And any project that they attempt to do, any utilitarian purpose they claim it is for, is always overshadowed by the impossible returns of being able to create a token for free at absolutely zero cost, with zero obligation to produce anything or to create anything useful or return some value to that person and sell them that token for money. And everybody with a little self-reflection who's been in this space for any amount of time knows the pull. They know that thing in the back of your head that tries to excuse that, oh, this project could just be done and I could make this token or this NFT and I can sell it and somebody will pay thousands of dollars for it. And you realize if you self-reflect just a little bit and you're actually honest with yourself, you would know. You would analyze your own attempt to do this, and you would realize that the thing you're trying to do is figure out a way to print a token and make it worth make it sound good enough that someone would buy it, rather than accomplish something real, produce something valuable, make a network that people would actually use, and that you've simply exhausted all other potential methods, and the only thing you can figure out how to build this, the only way that you can figure out how to build this system or this tool is by making a token. It's never that way. That, in my opinion, is the raison d'etre of all of crypto. It is excuses to print tokens. And some of those excuses sound good. Some of those excuses actually produce something. Some of those actually, the excuse to attempt to produce value for this or to support a hype cycle for these tokens actually builds something interesting from time to time. But that the goal is ultimately printing money because they don't get to do it with Bitcoin anymore. They don't have seigniorage and they want it. And almost every single case is about trying to find a reason to sell a token. And anytime somebody points out that it's a scam or that it's not going to work, they just say, oh, you're mean. Oh, you're not recognizing the things that we're doing. Oh, you're just not inclusive. We're just nice over here and we invite everybody. Of course a scammer is going to be nice. Of course somebody who's trying to sell a token on based on frivolous foundations is going to accept and welcome anybody and everybody and whatever stupid belief or opinion or position or principle or whatever. They don't care about values. They're just there to get rid of the token that they got for free and offload it for more money. The Bitcoin maximalist in me knows that. It recognizes that in every single project. I know almost, I can count on one hand the number of people in quote-unquote crypto that I think are actually cypherpunks, that aren't just Bitcoin only, but actually have a goal unto themselves, that actually have a principle that they adhere to. And honestly, it's probably mostly in Monero. I see people that I would actually consider trying to adhere to some sort of cypherpunk principle, and they simply value privacy over the economic reality. I think that's the big thing that they fail to understand is, and as someone where, like someone who values privacy heavily myself, I sympathize with their position. I sympathize with their arguments. I know where they are coming from, but I think they have made a fundamental economic mistake. That they fail to realize that privacy doesn't matter if your money is not secure, and that there's something more fundamental. Privacy has to come second behind the independence and the security of the money, and I think they've made that trade-off. I think they've made a fundamentally bad trade-off. Essentially, DigiCash and like kind of the precursors of Bitcoin did is they failed to realize how important the foundation is that would enable privacy to actually happen, that would enable an independent system, and that fundamentally the monetary token, the monetary assurances are more valuable and more important than anything and everything else. If I wanted to add a Bitcoin maximalist principle to this list, yet another one, that printing money is unethical, and that the framing of every one of these crypto projects is almost universally just a competition to have the best sounding excuse for needing to print tokens for free that they can then sell and make ungodly amounts of money off of. It is not an ecosystem of projects that must have token printing in order for any of them to work. They are projects that are just good enough and have just enough perceived value and have just enough buzzwords to make money printing sound legitimate. I think that's, from the context of Pete's article, I actually think that's the most important framing, is you have to look at all of crypto. Like, people constantly like, oh, it's equity. It's not equity. It's not equity in anything. Nobody owes you a damn thing because you bought some token on some network. They can all leave tomorrow, bail on the entire project. It's not a business. It's not a legal arrangement. It's not a contract. It's barely even an implied promise. And in my opinion, from an economic standpoint, from the idea of a decentralized social media and, you know, decentralized video posting website, decentralized DNS, decentralized blah, blah, blah. Like every single thing that they claim is that they need another token for and another token for. Every one of them are doomed to failure specifically because of the token. Because the only adoption they get is speculation, is people attempting to, it's like a, what was the one that was trying to do like mesh networks and it like went to like billions of dollars. And somebody like did the calculation of any of the real value and all this supposed quote unquote yield that people were doing for this token. And everybody was like, oh, it's future adoption. It's going to be great. And then it turned out like somebody did the math on it. And the only actual use, like the value of the actual token for the specific purpose that this multi-billion dollar network was supposedly sustaining was like $100 a month or something like that. Like it was so small, it was almost comical. Something like 99% of the supposed return was all just money printing. It was all just the newly issued tokens on the network. And you see this over and over and over again because nobody's actually adopting it for its utility. They're just buying into the token, convinced that because something sounds like it's going to be worthwhile, that the token must go up in value, and then it just becomes circular. People are buying the token because the token is going up in value, and that means that everybody's using the platform, but nobody's actually using the platform. Nobody needs the platform. Nobody needs the token for the platform. Like, it's totally arbitrary. Nobody would use BitTorrent if you have to use its own BitTorrent money. Nobody would use Apple if you had to buy Apple stock in order to spend money at Apple. And just think about how unbelievably inefficient and convoluted it would be if Apple was literally printing and selling tokens that you had to have and hold so that you could then buy an Apple TV or a MacBook or an iPad or an iPhone or something. And then that this is fluctuating in value on the market, the token, because it's not an equity token. Maybe they would make it equity too, but irrelevant. Like the idea that you would need this to use their product or their service or to go on their app store and that it might double in price tomorrow based on what people think they're going to sell in MacBooks and then it would cut in half based on what they think people are going to buy on the app store is absurd. It's literally putting the cart before the horse, even though the cart still has to come after the horse. It's trying to predict the future, trying to predict the amount of Macs and like devices and things that they're going to sell. And then the price fluctuates wildly based on people trying to decide whether or not they're going to need a MacBook in the future. So they have to buy a bunch of tokens now and potentially hold them. And then the end result of how many MacBooks they actually sell when the earnings report does all of that. There's zero value to putting some stupid token at the beginning of this whole ridiculous process unless Apple is just trying to sell a token without actually having to make any Macs. That is crypto, and that is the reason a Bitcoin maximalist criticizes the living crap out of that system, because I think that is the honest economic framework for assessing what is happening in the crypto ecosystem. It is a bunch of excuses about printing money. It's just democratized fiat. It's the same seigniorage. It's the same desire to print money. It's the same idea that we're just going to write wealth into a spreadsheet and then all of these great things will happen and everybody will be rich forever. Except that everybody can play this time instead of just the government. In my view, Bitcoin maximalism is a completely different set of principles. It's that printing money is wrong, is that sound money is the most important aspect of any and all of this. It's that separating money and state is the ultimate and most important and most difficult goal, and that to decentralize, to meaningfully decentralize anything, it takes time, it takes work, it is incredibly difficult, and it takes a lot of slow grinding and built-up momentum. Anything that is going to be big enough and sustainable enough to change the world in that way is going to take a long time to get moving. But the idea is that it has massive economic weight, is that it builds up a staggering amount of momentum, and when it starts moving, it can't be stopped because the foundation of it is strong. The foundation of it is widely distributed. It exists in every place on the planet at the same time, and its principles are strongly adhered to. And I think the mission of Bitcoin is important enough that everything should be weighed in value against it. Then I think crypto, so much of what they say they are trying to accomplish, and so many of the fancy toys and wing digits and gadgets that they want to build for all sorts of fancy little crap, is uninteresting. It's uninteresting if it is not about the explicit goal of separating money and state, and it won't have a meaningful impact. It will not matter when weighed against the more important mission. And that is Bitcoin maximalism to me. And there is a lot more to unpack. I've done a huge set of notes and thoughts and all sorts of things for an episode on this that will also extend on a lot of things that we talked about in the Shitcoin Insider episode 8. So we'll close this out. I don't even know how I ranted this long on this episode, but you know, that's how this goes. Welcome to Bitcoin Audible. I'm Guy Swan. just a huge thank you. Speaking of Bitcoin maximalism, I'm not sure if anybody notices or how many of you notice, but my sponsors are Bitcoin only. I could make a lot more money by just grabbing any random crypto project that sent me an offer and, you know, taking the highest bidder. But I value very highly who I work with. And CoinKite, Swan Bitcoin, Fold, these guys are Bitcoin only. They're solid companies with really good teams and really good people. And they're at the center of my Bitcoin life. They're products and stuff. They're literally things that I use every single day. And I hope you guys value that, because that's yet again another part. Like, I see that as a Bitcoin maximalist principle, is that I don't put making money above the reason we are here, the why. The why comes first, and that's why I work with companies that I trust and things that I like. And I also super, super appreciate that they are there to support the show. So a thank you to those guys, and they have discounts for all you guys I got special links and discount codes and everything in the show notes, so check them out if you're looking for companies that also adhere to those Bitcoin only principles. Okay, with that, thank you guys so much for listening. I will have another episode very soon, so do not forget to subscribe to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And I will catch you on the next episode. Until then, everybody, take it easy, guys.
You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.